happen, we have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum.
I'm Ann Northrup.
Great.
Yes,
day.
I'm back again. I haven't disappeared again.
Very nice to have you here, Ann. And our guest in about 15 minutes is going to be Carlos Menchaca, an out gay New York City Council member from Brooklyn who is running for the mayor of the city of New York.
Very eager to talk to Carlos. And in a continuing effort to wipe out all vestiges of the Trump administration, President Biden's Department of Housing and Urban Development says LGBTQ people are now covered under the Federal Fair Housing Act.
This is the first agency that has done that, apparently. The passage of the Equality Act, our federal LGBT rights bill, depends on ditching the filibuster in the Senate. But one bisexual senator says she won't let that happen.
Now, she's not the only senator who has that opinion, but she's certainly one of them. Charges have been dropped by the city district attorney against Amy Cooper, the woman who attacked Chris Cooper in Central Park last summer. She falsely reported him to the police as threatening her. But Chris says what's more important to racial justice is D.C. statehood, as you saw him talk about here a couple of weeks ago.
Attention, child molesters. A Georgia bill would require a panel of three doctors to examine the genitalia of girls to decide whether they should be allowed to play girls' sports.
Is this the new full employment scheme in Georgia? Sad report that groundbreaking gay singer Ari Gold has died at the age of 47.
And big news from Africa, an LGBT group there has opened an office in Ghana.
Very exciting. Always happy to report international stories like that. But let's start in the U.S. of A., where the Biden administration is moving ahead with on all fronts, including LGBT rights. And this week, the Department of Housing and Urban Development put out a directive saying that it will enforce the Fair Housing Act in terms of non-discrimination against LGBT people on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity.
Based on the Civil Rights Act of 1964 being interpreted by the Supreme Court, that sex discrimination, that discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and gender identity is sex discrimination. Now, Biden already did an executive order on that. Now it seems like the agencies are working to comply with it. HUD, Housing and Urban Development, where Ben Carson is no longer, said that there are 197 claims of housing discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity filed within just the last year. And they are going to consider these under this order. You can go back for a year. So if you've been discriminated against within the last year or going forward, you can file. And they're, the Equal Rights Center found that this was back in 2014, but 48% of older same-sex couples who tried to get into senior housing experienced adverse treatment. And the National Center for Transgender Equality found that 20% of transgender people face discrimination when looking for housing.
And as you say, this can be anything from senior housing to shelters to any kind of real estate situation where people are being discriminated against. Now, am I right to think that in the Obama administration, there were executive orders or directives or rules that gave us these kinds of protections, all of which were wiped out by the Trump administration? So the process here seems to be to restore a lot of the protections that existed in the Obama administration, but go the next step to codify more formally, this is still a directive, but as we go along, advance those protections.
Right.
Okay. And in the Department of Health and Human Services is agreeing to a court order that is delaying implementation of a Trump rule that attempted to kill non-discrimination protections against service providers,
right.
Which is a whole wide swath of subjects. The court ordered a delay in implementation of the Trump rules, and the Biden administration is now saying, we agree with that. We don't want to implement the Trump rules. We're fine. And what we're going to do is study this for 6 months until we can put in place more firm non-discrimination rules instead of getting rid of them.
Now, the Bostock decision is a pretty firm ruling. It's the law of the land, you know, but we still want and need the Equality Act, the federal LGBT rights bill. And it could be passed tomorrow, but because the House already passed it last year, would certainly pass it right away again. But the Senate needs to get rid of the filibuster, or I don't see this passing. And one of the key, there are, as you noted at the top of the show, there are a couple of Democrats against that. But like Manchin of West Virginia, but also,
and Feinstein, Dianne Feinstein doesn't want to get rid of the filibuster.
Chuck will have to have another talk with her. One of them is the bisexual Arizona Senator Kyrsten Sinema, who says her mind is closed on the matter. She also outright opposes raising the minimum wage. She may end up getting a primary.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, Arizona, it's a toss-up. But let's be clear, the Equality Act to pass in the Senate needs 60 votes, right? It doesn't...
It would have to go through a cloture vote, yes. We have to get rid of that. I mean, the main reason, of course, we have to get rid of that is because we have to pass the voting rights bill and the H.R. 1, which would extend voting rights around the country in all kinds of ways. If we don't do that, I mean, this... But, you know, we're in big, big trouble for the 2022 elections. All right.
Even with Trump going after McConnell and calling him whatever he called him.
Reelected.
Yeah.
He called him Dore. The House has sent the nomination of Dr. Rachel Levine to be the Assistant Secretary of Health, and she would be the first Senate-confirmed transgender official in our government.
And is getting horrendous hate tweets and Facebook posts, and the attacks are just disgusting from the right wing going after her as a trans woman. Right. It's, you know, what she has already put up with in her life is unbelievable in assuming a public post as the Pennsylvania Secretary of Health, and it is only escalating now that she is being nominated for this federal position.
Well, speaking of hate and idiocy, we told you last week that, you know, an Ayatollah in, I believe it was Iran, and an Israeli rabbi said that if you take the COVID vaccine, it's going to turn you gay. This is now a position adopted by QAnon.
So nice when they form coalitions. And by the way, you know, people, I think, were quite giddy at the presentations of the House managers in the Trump hearing in the Senate about, you know, what a great presentation. And they really laid out all the stuff against him. And this is really going to be a, you know, he'll never come back from this, because even though he wasn't convicted, everything's out there on the record. And I think that's just tremendously naive. I think it was a very false sense of security to rely on that.
Well, I mean, you know, we can look at the spectacle of what's happening in the Republican Party and the Fox News hosts. You know, they regularly condemn cancel culture. Don't cancel anybody, but only on the left. Now they're conducting this all out purge of anybody who voted for impeachment in the Republican Party. I mean, state parties are voting unanimously to censure public officials that they helped elect. And then there was Representative Adam Kinzinger of Illinois. He was condemned by 11 members of his own family who said he was in cahoots with the devil's army.
I think one of the most important things I saw this week was actually an interview on, wait for it, The View, where they brought on a woman who had been a QAnon cultist, and she explained how she had been sucked into that point of view, and then how she had gradually pulled out of it. And it was quite illuminating and vivid to have her describe her whole trajectory.
Well, those who value democracy or believe in it, in the Senate trial, the senators who voted for impeachment represent 75 million more Americans than those who voted not guilty. Think about that. It just shows you the Senate is a hopelessly undemocratic body. It can't be redeemed. And although the Democrats are in control by, you know, half a vote, basically, at this point.
Well, what is going on in spite of all this is a flagrant campaign to, you know, take away voting rights across the country, to censure anyone who steps out of line from Trump, and to, as we have discussed, go after trans people as one of their highest priorities to gain support in the next year or two.
And absolutely. Mississippi, the Senate passed a bill to ban trans women and girls from participating in sports. And this is in violation of NCAA policy and could threaten Mississippi's federal education funding. And that bill goes to the House.
These proposals are happening across the country, but uncovered this week is a plan by the Heritage Foundation, the Alliance Defending Freedom, and the Family Policy Alliance called the Promise to America's Children. It is an anti-trans agenda that includes no school sex ed, no mention of LGBT people in schools, anti-LGBT discrimination should be allowed in schools, conversion therapy should be promoted, no trans kids, particularly female trans kids in sports, no health care for minors who are trans, no LGBT adopted parents, and schools are allowed and encouraged to out LGBT kids to their parents.
These are the people who talk about uniting America.
Exactly. But this is a formal a war plan by the right wing.
Well, and Georgia is really declaring war. I mean, they don't just want to ban trans girls and women from girls' sports. They want to create, quote, a panel of three physicians to examine reproductive organs and genetic makeup of girls, which, as I said, is a child molester's dream job. The Georgia School Board Association wrote the legislation, wrote the legislators that the proposed law would go against Title IX of the federal anti-discrimination law and President Biden's executive order. It would also ban civil liability for the physicians poking around in these girls' privates.
It's unbelievable. They are absolutely shameless. They are absolutely relentless. And this, do not kid yourself that these people are going away anytime soon.
Oh, Arkansas, the Senate passed a health care religious objections bill that allows doctors to refuse treatment to LGBTQ people, except in emergency circumstances. But you know, and it will also let pharmacists deny fertility drugs to lesbians or deny hormone treatments for a trans person needing inpatient care for an infection. I mean, the hatefulness here, but they think they have a winning issue by attacking trans people.
Often. Now, people, I've gotten a few notes from people who say, and why are the Democrats so wimpy? Why are they not fighting back more? Why didn't they call witnesses in the Trump hearing in the Senate? Why are they backing down? I'm not sure I believe that that's what's happening, but do you have a take on that?
Do I have a take on it? I mean, again, wanting to move forward with Biden's agenda was why they agreed to just take a statement in the trial rather than call witnesses, because that could have gone on forever. And what was the point? People were never going to change their minds. Look, in Pennsylvania, they want to elect high court judges from districts drawn by Republicans who control the legislature overwhelmingly and currently elected statewide. And Arizona wants to cancel the votes of voters in presidential elections and let the state legislature decide who the electors are going to be, which is the way we started in this country.
I was going to say, back to the 18th century. Well, some are fighting back. I'm happy to see that Brian Sims, the out gay state legislator in Pennsylvania, is going to run for lieutenant governor, while the quite provocative lieutenant governor currently is running for Senate. And we have a candidate here in New York City for mayor. Out gay member of the city council who we are going to bring on now and talk to about his campaign. Carlos Menchaca has been a member of the New York City Council for two terms, born in El Paso, Texas, raised in public housing by a single mother, and as I say, a member of the New York City Council for the last seven and a few weeks, years, and now he wants to run for mayor. Hi, Carlos.
Buenas tardes. Andy, good to see you, and good to see you both.
Carlos, I once demonstrated against the council member in your district, Tom Cute, because he was so anti-gay at Windsor Terrace in the snow. But times have changed, haven't they?
Times have changed, and boy, do they need to continue to change.
Well, we couldn't agree more with that. So we have to ask you, I think Andy figured out there are now 40 people running for mayor of New York in this horrible time in history when everything is a mess. So tell us why you're doing this.
I don't know about you, but I'm ready to turn the page on city politics here in New York and usher in something that is brighter and better for New York. I know that our democracy is in shambles and it feels like that, but what I want to do is bring a different energy. I would be the first gay Latino to be mayor of the city. And I think that what I do is I reflect the energy that has been part of the essential work that has happened here in the city of New York. When I think about the vibrancy of the city, I think about the people who I've been in contact with, that I've been in organizing with, that I've been in activism with, and it's the immigrant community, working families. This is my story. You know, I grew up in public housing, as you said, Anne, and so much of what I've learned is really about ensuring that our government can do the best to ensure that the most vulnerable in our city get what they need to be able to thrive. And that's what I've been doing in the last 7 years in Sunset Park and Red Hook, not just as a council member, but as the chair of the Immigration Committee. I was a task force co-chair for the census. You know, I've been really thinking through how we can revolutionize government to ensure that we can reimagine our institutions like the police, healthcare, education, but to do it with communities at the front, letting them tell us how to transform. And I'm ready for that.
People can go to your website, carlos2021.com.
Yes, carlos2021.com.
And they can read all about your issues. But here's your chance, because a lot of people are just meeting you for the first time. And we're talking to people all over the country.
All over the world.
All over the world. What is the achievement that you have that you're most proud of that you think will resonate with people this year? The thing that you've done that you're most proud of?
It's my political courage, Andy. So much of what I think we have seen nationally is this like moment where we want Democrats to do the right thing, to step over and make something happen. And that's what I've been doing as the representative of a low-income immigrant community, working families. I voted against the four new borough jails of $9.2 billion price tag. I do not want to create a more carceral state in our city. Those are spaces for immigrants and for black and brown trans women. That's what's really, I think, at the core of my leadership style. I voted against the budget last year because we did not actually defund the NYPD to move critical resources to COVID-impacted communities. That is what makes me different. I'm the only elected official that is standing up and that has been standing up against developers like Industry City and who bowed out of a ULURP application, a big rezoning moment. It was the first time that a community really was heard and won. And so imagine that at the top, to recreate and reimagine all our city agencies. That is what makes me different.
Well, I think that courage is something that we're longing for in this city. And when you talk about energy, and we look at how depressed we think the leadership has been for the last God knows how many years, or beholden to the developers, it's going to take courage to go after the police department. I've been here for 50 years, and every single mayor has been so cowardly in dealing with the police. And I wonder how you envision being able to change that relationship.
Well, and it starts with the campaign itself. I am running a grassroots campaign, and so I'm asking people to go to carlos2021.com and send a grassroots donation. Every New Yorker gets matched 8-1. I'm not taking developer money. I'm not taking corporate PAC money. I'm not taking police or corrections money. That's going to include, or that's going to really fuel a campaign that's going to have the courage to stand up. What we have done, though, in the city of New York with incredible energy on the ground is organize. That energy is on the ground right now that has been marching since last year, after Breonna Taylor, after George Floyd. And so that needs to be matched at the city level. And so you will see me demonstrate my leadership in the next few months as we get to the next budget. And so the first thing we have to do is literally defund the NYPD. Once we can remove the militarized high number of officers in our space, we can actually start building communities and meeting them where they have the biggest needs. That's what we're seeing right now in terms of crime and homelessness. We're not funding it in the way that we need to. And I'm talking about all the different things that the city agencies are doing. And that's why I'm running. I'm going to bring a whole new way of thinking. But I'm also one of the only candidates that's experienced in this race that can actually run the city of New York.
Now, you can't win without votes. I mean, that sounds like a tautology. And some of the biggest remaining voting blocks, I mean, in the old days, you had political clubs which had blocks. You don't really these days, but you have some rather conservative right-wing religious groups, fundamentalist, Orthodox Jewish, Catholic, you know, blocks. And they get a lot of money from the city, even though a lot of them are very anti-gay. I mean, one of your rivals, Andrew Yang, said, let the Orthodox Jews run the schools the way they want to. I don't care if the kids get educated. It would be a violation of their religious freedom to enforce state standards. So that's a big controversy. How do you balance that? Yeah, obviously, we're all welcome in this city, but how do you deal with that?
So, Andy, I feel like I've already been doing that as a council member representing an incredibly diverse community, working families. An Orthodox Jewish community like Borough Park has been part of my district. And here's the thing that I know more than anything is that people are talking about the disparities that for too long we have been ignoring. And I'm talking about the things that are everyday municipal things, picking up garbage on the streets, fixing potholes, ensuring that the park has what they need, ensuring that public spaces and the amenities that we promise in the city are maintained. That's what people want. And so as a gay person, as an openly very proud gay person, I have been able to engage with communities that you might think might be conservative. And that's what they want. They want someone that can actually listen to them no matter what, understand their needs, and be able to address it. And municipal government.
But cowardly anti-gay, should they be getting all this city and state and federal money? That's my question. I mean, they are.
Look, we're not gonna allow for hate crimes or hate to be embedded into anything that the city is involved in. And I think that's something that I've made clear in my work as city council member. But no, we got to hold back any kind of anything that deters us from the ability to build communities at a time where our democracy is under attack. We have to hold the line. And I will do that as mayor. I think we've done that on the ground too by bringing in another way. Like participatory budgeting, for example. Instead of saying, you're not going to get money, how about we start with dollars and come together as a community and say, what do we need as neighbors? And that's just been very strong, especially with this white supremacist that we saw in the White House that is gone, that really kind of created this just incredible feeling of discombobulated feeling in our cities. And this is why I'm asking the Department of Buildings to remove the president's name, the ex-president's name, Trump, from buildings. I do not want New Yorkers to walk to work thinking about the trauma that they have been experiencing, no matter who they are or what immigration status they had. Children in cages have been a real trauma for America. We should not be looking at his name. And so this is part of this reimagining of what city can do and how we can work together.
There's also a lot of trauma among, say, Black trans women in this city and elsewhere for the violence they're facing and the attacks and the discrimination, and for gay kids in schools who are not supported by the school system because there are no lessons about LGBT history or non-discrimination or human rights. How much focus have you placed and will you place on those kinds of issues?
Well, as the at this point, the only openly gay person of color in the city council, we've been working together with the other LGBT members to really ensure that curriculum in the schools is a priority. But I think we can go further than that. The LGBT movement is now incorporating gender nonconforming young people. And as a person that is openly gay, I get to be invited into spaces where young people are talking about their gender fluidity. This is something that is still so new to the administrative bureaucracy. And I get to be in that space because of who I am. That's the power of representation. Being open is going to allow for that kind of conversation. And what I would do as mayor is ensure that we are doing everything to protect that child, their expression, and so that they can thrive. And it has to happen here in the city. And so nationally, I think this election is going to put New York City on a different map that will allow us to be a beacon across the entire country on things that we can do to experiment in this way, to bring more more rights and protection of rights for young people. And our Black and brown trans women have been at the center of so much. And back to like this carceral state and the police have been such a big issue here. There's a lot of state laws that now with the supermajority in Albany, I think we're going to hopefully get to ensure that we're not incarcerating our Black and brown trans women, that we ensure that sex work is exactly that. It is work, and that it should be it should not be something that incarcerates a person.
Well, you want to end a lot of incarceration. You also want to end a lot of cars. You're the bicycle-riding
yes.
council member. We don't have to get into that, but anybody who goes to your site is going to see how much you're in favor of that kind of thing. I want to ask you another question about, you know, we can't solve problems unless we know what they are. The city has laws about collecting data on LGBT people and health things. We have never been able to get, and even your council leader has never been able to get, the stats on LGBTQ people and COVID and a lot of other things. How are you going to make the agencies do that? When are we going to get this stuff?
This is why we have to turn the page on the old regime. Anyone, and I'm the only candidate that has no connection to the past administrations or past policies. I think data can drive a lot. And so as mayor, what I want to do, and this is something that I've been so committed to in transparency for the things that I've been working on to ensure that people have the data that they need and want. I think that not only the city, but I think that this is part of educating everyone. And when I'm thinking about education, I'm thinking about language access as well. So it's not just enough to get the data. We have to actually ensure that everyone has access to that data. And so I'd love to work with you and Anne and anyone else.
If you get the data, call us up this week and we'll give it to our viewers next week. Because I asked the mayor for it personally and I still can't get it. So if you can get it, that'd be great.
Let's talk for a minute about COVID, because you do in particular represent an area that would be described probably as a less privileged in relation to, say, Manhattan Upper East Side areas. How is vaccine distribution going in your area? How do you see the city handling the epidemic these days and going forward?
You know, disappointment and disgrace are the words that I think about when I think about the city and the state. And I mean, forget the federal government. We're now beginning to see an actual leader in the White House. But the COVID pandemic has exposed something that so many of us, and I'm speaking from the point of view of as a gay Mexican with an immigrant experience, we've known that for too long the city has not focused on communities of color, low-income communities. And so Sunset Park has been an epicenter. And when you walk the streets and you talk to people, people talk about how we have lost so much in lives. And these are elders. These are people who are street vendors that were out on the street doing their work, being essential workers. So there's just incredible grief right now that I don't think we've even begun to hit. But then you look at the numbers that the mayor just released. 16% of 16% is the number of people who have been vaccinated in adults in affluent white communities versus as low as 2% for communities of color like mine. So we are in a real conundrum here, and it's a whole bunch of reasons why people don't connect to the vaccine. Mistrust, and that's on us as government. We can make a better opportunity for creating trust. But it's also just infrastructure and getting this out to people. And so we are in a hole right now. And what I want to do is really change that so that people can trust government, so that when we're in another public health crisis, people can come to government, not run away from it.
Well, we will remind people that when you vote this year in New York in the June primary, what's the date of the primary?
June 22nd.
You get to rank five candidates on a presidential ballot. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You can vote for one. You can vote for five, however many you want. And then there's a preferential ballot system. So, and there's so many to choose from.
There are a lot of candidates, but there's no one like me. Go to carlos2021.com. We are running a progressive grassroots campaign, and we're going to need everyone to join in. No matter where you are in the country, we're going to need your support.
And one would think, since the primary falls during Pride Week, that that could give you a little boost.
Well, there's a lot of things happening in June. There's Pride Month. There is the election, and there's also the budget. And so I hope that you can see and continue to see my demonstrated leadership as a city council member, because I will have a vote in this next budget, and I will have a voice, and I will bring the voices that have been ignored for too long. And this is part of my leadership. I want to continue as the mayor to really attack these disparities and turn the page. I think it's time.
Well, there's no question you would be a new and different kind of mayor from what we have seen, certainly in my lifetime and long before, I'm sure. So thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Come back
and update us on your campaign as it goes along.
You got it. I will. And I know we're not in a studio, but and I wish I could give you a hug, because that is exactly what I'm missing right now.
I would love that. And I hope someday soon we can do that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye, Andy.
Thanks, Carlos.
Bye,
Andy. See you soon.
See you soon.
Okay. Well.
Definitely a fresh young face. And of course, young only in relation to us.
That's true. That is true. Okay, back to the litany of what's going on around the country. In Arizona, they've got a bill that would require state identification documents to contain only a male or female gender marker. No X marker for non-binary people. Now, they don't allow it already, but they want to ban it. One state senator, the chief sponsor, John Fillmore, said, "What if someone wants to identify as a chicken or something?" So an ethics complaint was filed against him.
That's my next identity. There's an update on a very tangled and fascinating custody case that we have been following now, I guess, for 10 years, longer. Two women... this is so long ago, they got a civil union. They didn't get married. Lisa Miller and, hold it, Janet Jenkins. And they got a civil union in Vermont, and then they moved to Virginia, and then they split up, and one of them moved back to Vermont. And Janet Jenkins, who was the biological mother of their child, wanted custody, but she was a little wacky, and the court actually in Vermont gave custody to Lisa, I'm sorry, Janet Jenkins was the Vermont woman who gained custody, although she was not the biological mother. Lisa Miller, who became a born-again Christian, ran off with the daughter to Nicaragua with the help of fundamentalist groups. She kidnapped the child and went to Nicaragua. Meanwhile, Janet Jenkins has been fighting all these years to get custody of the child. Well, Lisa Miller has now turned herself in and is in jail in Florida for the kidnapping of daughter Isabella. Isabella is still in Nicaragua. She is now 18. And Janet Jenkins is suing all these right-wing organizations that helped Lisa Miller kidnap the daughter.
But what does the daughter want to do now that she's emancipated?
We don't know yet. Maybe join the Sandinistas in Nicaragua. What do I know? But the fact that Lisa Miller is now in jail in Florida is a big advance in this case.
Why did she turn herself in? All right. I mean, if these are, I mean, this should be subject of American crime.
At least, American Horror Story.
More on that later.
Yeah.
Speaking of horrors, we lost another trans woman of color to murder this week.
Yeah.
Alexis Kimmy Icon Braxton, 45 years old, trans woman, shot to death in her apartment in Miami, Florida. The police, this was on February 4th. It may have been a hate crime. They're investigating. It's the sixth such murder this year.
She was a hairstylist, a proud trans woman, happy, successful in her life, and now gone.
And in Watertown, New York, Deanna Latray, 54, was going along in life. There was some kind of a domestic disturbance at her house. This is back in 2017. And the police came, but as soon as they spotted her, they arrested her. What did they say to her?
She
let you walk the streets looking and dressed like that. So they take her into custody, rip off her hair, strip her naked, do an invasive cavity search. So now, 3 years later, she is suing the Watertown Police Department, the sheriff, the police chief, everybody, for the arrest, false arrest, for harassing her, sexually assaulting her.
And, of course, hitting the news this week was the update on the case of Amy Cooper versus Chris Cooper.
We got a picture of the two of them. They're not related, although we're all brothers and sisters.
So you'll remember last May when suddenly we saw this video in Central Park of this white woman with her dog yelling at Chris Cooper and accusing him of attacking her, wanting to murder her.
Well, he was just trying to get her to put the dog on a leash because he was birding in the park. And this is a part of the park. You're not supposed to, you have to have your dog on a leash.
So she lost her job. She lost the dog temporarily. She became the subject of worldwide scorn and opprobrium. Chris said he did not want her prosecuted necessarily, had no hesitation about calling her a racist and her actions completely inappropriate. But he was not out to destroy her life. Well, now the Manhattan District Attorney has decided to drop the charges against her because she went through a restorative justice process where she went to five therapy sessions to talk about race. And the therapist said that it was a moving experience and she learned a lot.
Now, I just hope they don't let Trump off with five therapy sessions.
Well, the problem is that her lawyer says she was acquitted. They dropped the charges. And a lot of people are going to have legal problems because there was such misinterpretation of what happened.
They're going to sue Chris? Well, Chris's attitude, he gave a statement out that we should read because he gave it to everybody. He said that he is far more outraged that the Congress continues to deny the mostly black and brown people of District of Columbia, statehood, and the representation every American deserves, than by anything Amy Cooper did. He says that gross racial injustice of not having statehood could be fixed by the Congress right now, if Kyrsten Sinema gets rid of the filibuster. And that's what people should be focused on, not last year's events in Central Park.
So people are a little torn about this, but I agree with Chris that certainly her life has been a shambles. Because
she doesn't sound sorry at this point if she's letting lawyers say that stuff.
She's made no statements of contrition recently. I guess she put out some statement at the time after she was, you know, so battered and bruised by everybody's attacks. But nothing from her lately. And now we get this statement from her lawyer that acts as if she's been exonerated and that they're going after other people.
Wow.
Horrible.
We told you all the terrible things happening to trans folks, but there was a kind of a breakthrough on children's television. Remember Blue's Clues? They now have Blue's Clues and You. It's a reboot of the 1996 children's series. They posted a song about the alphabet where the P in the alphabet stands for pride, and the P is in rainbow flag colors and trans pride flag colors.
All sorts of different colors. All right. In Orlando, Ricky Martin is becoming a spokesman for the Pulse Memorial Foundation. That was announced on the latest anniversary of the Pulse massacre. He's taking that on.
Good news from San Francisco. The Noe Valley hilltop home of lesbian pioneers Phyllis Lyon and Del Martin has been recommended for landmark status by the city planning department. It would be the first located solely in a residential neighborhood and the first focused on lesbian history or herstory. Historic Preservation Commission is voting today as we're taping. Then the Board of Supervisors votes a second time. It's the fifth such LGBT site in San Francisco to be designated.
Now, we don't know. This is a recommendation from the Planning Council. We don't know what those other bodies will say. A couple, I guess, bought the house and the adjoining lot that was part of all this, an undeveloped lot, with plans to build on the undeveloped lot and improve the house a little, except everything they talk about sounds pretty extensive.
Don't touch the lot next door. Their ashes are partly buried there.
Their ashes buried and scattered there. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays.
Take it easy.
In New York, Governor Cuomo, currently under dire attack from his nursing home scandals around COVID, has ordered insurance coverage for some LGBT people for fertility issues. And they've also now the surrogate pregnancy law has gone into effect in New York. So
and a couple of passings to tell you about. The groundbreaking gay singer Ari Gold has died at the age of 47. It was a battle with cancer. He was born and raised in the Bronx in an Orthodox Jewish family. He performed at all the New York clubs and he did pop and rhythm and blues songs, but with a lot of explicit gay content. And he was really a mainstay, featured performer at Pride events all over the country, recorded seven albums, and he had RuPaul as his mentor.
And got a lot of, you know, statements by people like Lady Bunny and Laverne Cox and Ru at his passing about what an important figure he was. We've been doing this show so long that I remember when Ari Gold came on the scene and was quite a groundbreaker in being an out gay singer. His first album was in 2001, and he really was an important figure. I also am interested in the outpouring of affection for the CEO of Marriott Hotels, Arne Sorensen, who just died of pancreatic cancer at 62, because he was one of the first corporate leaders who really was full on in his support of the LGBT community. When I think about corporations that were early, I think of American Airlines, I think of Absolut Vodka, And Marriott was definitely among those, very few early on who really went whole hog in supporting the community.
He was also the first non-Marriott to run Marriott.
Okay.
All right. Okay. Congratulations to Adam Rippon, champion ice skater. He got engaged to his boyfriend, Jesse-Pekka Kajala, in December in Finland. They were apart during the pandemic for most of 2020, but absence made the heart grow fonder. And Adam, they announced their engagement. And Adam is working on a comedy series on figure skating for NBC.
Yeah, yes. Also, the Battle Royal heats up and continues between Heritage of Pride and the star organization, the Black Trans Women. And now they're not going to meet because Hop says they're not, star is not.
Are they meeting with Reclaim Pride?
Oh, God, no. We got over that years ago. But it's ridiculous.
It's
all right.
International news, yes?
Yes. In Tunisia, LGBT people are joining the demos against vicious police repression there. LGBT activists have become active in wider demonstrations around the world against repressive governments and police organizations, whether it's here in Tunisia or Thailand or Turkey. We're part of these uprising. Poland,
in Tunisia, that's quite risky. The military has arrested 1,700 of the protesters, including 300 minors. That's young people, not people in mines. Many are humiliated and tortured when they're in custody. So they're very brave. And it's about all kinds of issues. It's not just about gay issues.
No, but that's the point, that we are part of these coalitions. And the more we build these coalitions around the world and in this country, too, it's necessary if we're going to beat back these authoritarian, violent regimes.
Mexico has been legalizing same-sex marriage bit by bit, state by state. They're up to about 19 now, but the Supreme Court is going to rule February 24th in a case that could resolve the issue nationwide.
The UN has come out with a report about Iran and how LGBT kids there are tortured. Electric shocks, forced hormones, strong psychoactive medications, all to cure their sexual orientation or gender identity. They also, of course, persecute women, regime critics, trade unionists, ethnic and religious minorities, and human rights activists. And they still have a death penalty for gay sex. It's also true that people I know who've gone to Iran describe it as a wonderful place to visit. I only have
Anthony Bourdain's word for that.
Yeah. Well,
go there. On the street, he encountered a lot of sympathy for all kinds of Western issues. But don't try being out there. Don't try being an atheist there.
Look, you can go to many different parts of this country and
or have city.
Many different experiences. But yeah,
brothers and sisters, as I said at the top of the show, progress, great progress in Ghana. An LGBT office opened in Accra. They held a fundraiser that was attended by diplomats, including the Australian High Commissioner, who pledged support. But the executive secretary, I have to read this, of the National Coalition for Proper Human Sexual Rights and Family Values has demanded that it be shut down by the government.
Yeah, but I love seeing these pictures of these places opening in places like Accra, Ghana.
So brave. So
fantastic,
brave.
Yes. And in Angola.
When the Oscar Wilde Bookshop was opened in New York in 1968, I think, it was vandalized frequently because, people couldn't bear it in the village.
Well, look, we're still doing stories almost every week of various LGBT places and people being vandalized in this country. In Angola, they decriminalized homosexuality in 2019, but it is just now taken effect. I wouldn't claim you'd be entirely safe in Angola, but the law is on your side now.
In the United Kingdom, a school is renaming all the student houses at the Seaford Head School because one of them was named for J.K. Rowling and another was named for Winston Churchill, who are not in favor these days. She, of course, is a big transphobe. So the school just says we want to create a safe environment that's not bullying, and it doesn't help to have them our houses named after these people.
Maybe we could start naming things after peace and justice and liberty. And
they say they're going to name it after things like, you know, the mountain or the hillside or whatever, you know.
Well, half those mountains are named after horrible people, too. Also in the UK, a new rule, people who've been discharged from the military, LGBT people in disgrace, can now apply to get their medals back. People had their medals just cut off in humiliating ceremonies, but now they can apply to have them.
And we've told you a lot about the saga of the actor, C.I. Omuba, who sued when she was fired from playing Celie in The Color Purple, the musical, over homophobic posts that she'd made. And she said her religious rights were being violated. So this tribunal heard all the evidence, and they said, look, you would have refused to play Celie as a lesbian, so you would have totally destroyed the production. They offered you your salary. You wouldn't take it. Now you want to sue. And, did you read the rest of the script? Is there anything else your religion objects to there? I mean, and so basically, you know, I mean, she might appeal, but her only future, I think, at this point is singing at, you know, anti-gay rallies or something. I mean, she's just, you know, she thinks her rights are being violated. But she's an actor.
Up with people. That's what she'll do.
All right.
In Germany, 800 footballers, which I assume is soccer players, came out with a statement in a magazine supporting LGBT people and issues and saying they would support their teammates if they came out. Nice. It'd be nice if 800 players in Major League Baseball or football would issue such a statement.
In the Netherlands, the parliament voted to ban discrimination based on sexual orientation in the Constitution. The amendment has to be approved by 2/3 of both houses before it becomes law. Can't we do that here?
They did it in South Africa a long time ago. Yes. Well, I settled for the Equality Act. All right. Entertainment news.
Well, I started watching It's a Sin on HBO Max, not on HBO Max, but I got two preview issues thanks to the New Fest. And it's, you know, it's set in 1981 to 1991, a bunch of gay boys and
in London,
woman who lives with them. They move from the countryside to England. But it's, you know, it's very mixed cast. I'm holding off judgment, but people who've seen the whole thing, like our friend Mark King, who is a long-term HIV survivor and the author of the blog My Fabulous Disease, yeah, really went after it for stereotypes and for...
He said it's about blaming and shaming. It's about condemning gay sex. It's about blaming gay men for acquiring HIV and spreading it. And a lot of it is evidently about infected gay men who want to spread it. It sounds horrendous.
Well,
and yet it was so popular in England.
Yes.
Well, what we just tell you this to warn you and to help you understand that this is the theme running through it, evidently.
All right. I only watched one episode of Bridgerton, but of course, one of the players there, the woman who plays Queen Charlotte, Golda Rochuvel, who was mainly a stage actress, is biracial. She plays the wife of George III, who was, from all evidence, biracial. But she says she's a
proud
lesbian. Yeah, well, go ahead. You go ahead.
Proud to be gay, female, and black.
Very privileged and blessed to be one of them. She says, I don't speak for the community, but she wants to add her small voice to help create something big and wonderful for the next generation to see themselves and be proud of. And that's very important. She once played a lesbian Othello.
In 2018, in a play on a stage in Liverpool, as an out lesbian, yes.
And, you know, that's still a profession where it is still very difficult to be out. the acting profession. All right. Netflix is commissioning a biopic on civil rights leader Bayard Rustin, who died back in 1987. He was famous as the lead organizer of the 1963 March on Washington, a longtime pacifist and war resister, and a mentor to Dr. King. He was also persecuted for being gay, but he really didn't take a public role until the end of his life in the mid-1980s, when he came out and worked with us on some LGBT issues. Now, they're having an out gay director, George Wolfe, right, who's African-American, but the screenplay is going to be done by Dustin Lance Black, who is not Black, and he did the Milk screenplay, which I thought was good. He did the J. Edgar Hoover screenplay, which was terrible. So, we'll see.
And I heard him stand up and mispronounce biopic at a screening. He called it a biopic. So that undermines his credibility for me. It's being produced by the Obama's production company, this movie. But I agree. We can certainly reserve judgment to see what happens. But I, too, was surprised to, get Terrell Alvin McCraney to write the script. Does it have to be Lance Black? Whatever. I was sorry to see that Disclosure, our old pal Sam Fetter's sort of celluloid closet version of trans people in movies and TV through history, did not get an Oscar nomination or is not shortlisted for an Oscar. But Disclosure, very good documentary, highly recommended. And the short documentary that I talked about last week, Draw With Me, made by the young trans relative of Jennifer Lopez, also not shortlisted for an Oscar, but also worth seeing. There are a couple things coming up next week that are going to be available. There's a new four-episode series called Trans in Trump Land that's going to be on Topic.com, which is a subscription service, but you can get a free trial and you can watch all four half-hour episodes at once.
Send me the link. I'll put it in the email.
It visits young trans people in North Carolina, Texas, Mississippi, and Idaho, Latinx, Native, Black, and I found it quite fascinating. And legendary Miss Major Griffin Gacy is one of the executive producers, and it has a trans male host, Trans in Trump Land, available February 25th on Topic.com. And there's also a movie coming up called My Name is Pedro that is going to be available next week on many streaming services, Amazon and others. My Name is Pedro. It's about a gay Latinx teacher from the South Bronx who comes out of special ed, and he was a special ed kid, and he rises to be he goes to the Peace Corps, he becomes a principal, an assistant superintendent. I can't fully describe it. It is one of the most moving movies I've seen in a long time. My Name is Pedro.
Send me a link. Andre DeShields, out gay actor, is going to play Frederick Douglass next week, February 26th at 7 o'clock, in a feed from flushingtownhall.org. I will again include the full link in the email. We're down to our last 15 seconds. Sarah Paulson's going to play out lesbian, going to play Linda Tripp in American Crime Story, Impeachment of Bill Clinton.
Not a lesbian as far as we know, but definitely a traitor. Bye, everybody. See you next week.